Oh, my name's Philo. I am a grateful member of Al-Anon, and hi, there's familiar faces, and it's really good to be here. And as someone who puts stuff like this together, I just want to let's give Yvonne a great big round of applause, and her whole crew, Cassidy and everyone, all the co-hosts and security. I know that this is a lot of work, so thank you so much for doing it. And I've been lurking many times at Al-Anon without birders, so it's interesting to be here and be speaking. So thank you so much. I am and love, right? Love. We're talking about love, and Valentine's weekend, we're talking about love, and everything I think that I know of any value that I have to share about love, I've learned here in Al-Anon. I didn't come from a place where I had any information about love that was worthwhile. And we don't all start in the same place in Al-Anon. I've learned that over the time, because sometimes I would compare where I was with other people who started about the same time I was, and I didn't seem to be progressing quite the same as they did. But I sort of turned out eventually to sort of figure out I had a lot more damage too. So, I'm from an alcoholic family. Alcoholism runs down both sides of my family. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like, just so you know a little more when I talk about what it's like now, just what that means to me today, And I from an alcoholic family. Both of my parents come from single parent alcoholic families. Both of them come from a lot of abuse and neglect and abandonment, and there's lots of trauma there to share with their kids. And so we came along. My mom's also mentally ill, and my therapist says that she has a borderline personality disorder. My brother's therapist says she has a bipolar disorder. My other brother, it's like everybody has a different opinion, but everyone's in agreement that things were not right on Occidental Avenue South growing up. And she would always tell us, she was often very depressed and was going to kill herself on any given Tuesday. And she'd be happy to let you know that if it served her purpose to control the room. So it was a big, I was just this kid trying to do everything perfectly so mom won't die today, And my dad wasn't around a lot. And I get that now. I get why would you want to be around this all the time? But it's like back then I thought, why are you not here? So my dad's not there. I'm left with my mom. And it wasn't very long growing up before she sort of basically turned me into her de facto husband. And lots of stuff happened in the house growing up that shouldn't happen to kids. And there's a whole list of, abuse things that can happen. It's like you can check them all off. It all happened on Occidental Avenue South. And when my dad would show up, it was always drama, and he was the kind of father who was like, well, what are you crying about? I'll give you something to cry about. So when he was around, it wasn't even any better. So I was just this stressed out kid, just trying to do everything right. I was the boy of the year in sixth grade at White Center Heights Elementary School, you guys, which is pretty great because I was doing it all perfect and someone's finally noticing. But it's like, I don't know that I was the kid that other kids really appreciated. I don't know. I was certainly good with adults and then eventually puberty sort of happened and I sort of figured out I don't know if I might be gay, because my best friend Billy, who is an alcoholic, he to this day he owns a tavern. So it's like it was telling from the very beginning, we'd drink a lot sometimes, and the more we drink, the more passes he'd make at me. And so it's like I sort of encouraged alcohol around him because it was like, I'm going to get what I want. If he can just have another drink, it's going to go my way. So, and it took a long time in Al-Anon to kind of see that I was perpetuating alcoholism as much as I was trying to prevent it later on. And, I, You know, the problem with that is that, you know, Billy never remembered anything the next day. It was always tragic. It was, you know, it was terrible. And I was heartbroken because I'm falling in love and it's the most important thing that's ever happened to me. And you don't even remember. You don't even remember anything. And let's do it all again next weekend. You know, so it's like this is this pattern that starts out, you know, and continues on. You know, I got out the day after I graduated out of high school. I moved out. I was never a normal kid, you guys. I was, you know, for like seventh grade, they're like, what would you like for Christmas? And I was like, pots and pans. You know, it's like, you know, eighth grade, a phone machine. You don't have a phone. I know, but I want to be prepared. Like, it's like, I was like ready to go. And counting the days, and the day after I graduated from high school, I moved out, and I ended up getting an apartment with this guy that I barely knew, who seemed to have an alcohol problem, and his boyfriend was moving in with us. We found out like the last 2 days before we moved in together, and of course I didn't have a problem with that because I don't really have any boundaries or opinions about anything. So, you know, then all of a sudden there's the three of us. And. And then it wasn't very long before Jeff lost his job, and then his boyfriend wasn't working, and I'm supporting a family of three at 18, fresh out of high school, you know, and somehow I can do this, you know. And then eventually his boyfriend decides, I guess maybe because I'm the guy that's actually making a little money, like doesn't want to be in a relationship with Jeff down the hall. And can I stay in your room because we're breaking up? And I'm like, okay, because I don't really have any boundaries. And then eventually we're having sex because it's like, you know, I'm having sex with everybody my whole life, whether I really want to or not. So it's like, you know, not a big deal. But eventually it's like, okay, I guess I'm in a relationship with him now. And not even really being aware of that, how disappointing I am and how much I might be hurting this roommate that just lost his boyfriend down the end of the hall, because it's like somebody's caring about me. And I grew up in such a place with so little attention that it was like, or attention of the right kind, that it was like, oh my gosh, if you love me, that is enough. You know, it doesn't really matter what it is. You know, this is just brilliant. And problem with this, he's an alcoholic, you know, and we had fake IDs. We would go to the nightclub together and you know, and at some point during the night, and this happened regularly, he'd be like, Philo, will you wait right here for me? I'll be right back. And I'd be like, okay, where? Right here, you know? And he'd be like, yeah, right there. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna wait right here, you know, because it's like, yeah, I just want to make it sure I'm doing everything right. So if I do something wrong, you might not stick around. So I'm going to stay right here. And, you know, and eventually the nightclub's closing and they're closing the bar and people are leaving. And, you know, and the bar manager's like, hey, kid, you got to go. And I'm like, no, I have to stay, because like I told him, I will wait right here. You know, so it's like there's something really, really wrong very early on. I'm not someone that like ends up in an alcoholic relationship unsuspecting later, you know, and somehow ends up in Al-Anon. And I have always been a little jealous of those people. It's like every relationship I've ever had has been with someone who's an alcoholic. And, you know, eventually that ended and I met somebody else, maybe a year later, who was so dark and mysterious. There was something really wrong there, you guys. There was something so wrong, something that like I couldn't quite put my finger on. And I just knew that if I had enough love, if I just had enough, you know, if I could just treat them, somehow I know I'm gonna be able to make this all okay. And apparently I wasn't really making it all okay, you know? And I was working at Tower Records, and you know, quite often he'd come in the middle of the afternoon while I'm working, and there was a day in particular where he's like screaming that I'm cheating on him. Comes in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, drunk, and I'm like, I'm not cheating on you, but I'm feeling all of this shame for him and the embarrassment that he's causing because I'm so busy feeling everyone else's emotions for them. I don't have any place to feel my emotions for myself, you know. But I'm like, okay, I gotta, oh, excuse me, I'm so sorry, everyone, I gotta go take him home. So I take him home, you know, and eventually he would disappear again. And sometimes I, you know, we're very good detectives in Al-Anon. I don't know if you are, but it's like, I can find him. I know where he's going to, you know, okay, there he is. He's at this bar. You know, I knew he'd be here, you know, and then he's like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? Following me? And it's like, no, you know, I needed to talk to you, because it's like, if I don't know that you're okay, I am not okay. To the point of like, panic practically, you know what I mean? It's like, I gotta just know things are gonna be okay. Or where is he? What's going on? So I find him, you know? And then, and sometimes when I'd show up, he'd be really very drunk and he'd like knock me around a little bit. And I'd be like, oh gosh, so here we're doing this again. And I wasn't someone who just took it, mind you, but it's, I'm never really one that started any of the violence, but it's like, if you throw a few punches at me, eventually I'm gonna punch back. And then, okay, now we're being kicked out of the bar, and like, no, so Philo and Channing are out in front of, out in Pike Street, having a fight in the middle of the street, and everyone's gathered around, and this is love, right? This is what love looks like where I come from, and you know, and the police are coming. Oh my gosh, so we have to run. We got to get out of here before the police come. So it's like, you know, and then we go home and he's sorry. He shouldn't have pushed me. He shouldn't have hit me. And oh, it's really, it was a bad idea. It was a bad, I'm so sorry. And then we have like the most incredible makeup sex, you know, because it's like, because it's a roller coaster that's going on nonstop. And, you know, I think the weird thing that I've sort of learned over my time in Al-Anon is that love for me had to be so big and so loud, because every vibration that I had going on in my life prior to coming to Al-Anon was so big and so dramatic and so loud and so out of control that it's like, if it wasn't at this level, it's like, how could that possibly be interesting, you know? So it's like, anyway, then there was Valentine's Day. And we'd been fighting, so I guess this was a precursor to whatever happened, but it was like, he invited me over to his place, he's gonna make dinner, you know. I'm like, okay, so I like buy the Valentines, I got the chocolates, I got the flowers, I'm like excited, things are gonna be good. It's Valentine's Day, and I go over to his place and I ring the bell and nobody answers. So I ring it again. And nobody answers, and I ring it again, and nobody answers, and I ring it a few more times, and I wait 5 minutes, and I ring it some more, and it's like, okay, what's going on? Why isn't he here? He's supposed to be here, you know. So it's like, I know he's supposed to be, like, okay, maybe if I get on the roof of the building next door, I'll be able to see into his third floor apartment and make sure he's okay. So it's like, so I'm trying to figure out how to get in the building. Nobody else is coming, you know, and I'm running around this building numerous times trying to figure out how to get up. And eventually, you know, this is so ridiculous, you guys. It's like an old 1920s brick three-story apartment building. And I figured out if I'm really careful, I can just climb right up the side of this brick wall up to the third floor to like peek in on him. So it's like, so that's what I do. I'm like endangering my life, climbing up to the third floor, and I get up to the third floor window and I look in, and there he is. He's watching TV and getting drunk, and I knocked on the window, which I shouldn't have done, because, you know, if you're stalking people, sort of, you know, you kind of learn sometimes you should be a little more clandestine, but it's like, but I knocked on the window, and he saw me, and then it's like, and it took me a long time to come down without like hurting myself, but eventually I got down and I did not hurt myself. But by the time I got to the front of the building, the police had come, and they're like, are you Philo? And I'm like, Philo? No, I'm not Philo. Like, wait a minute. Oh my God, did he call the cops on me? You know, so it's like, oh my gosh. And so I'm like going home and I'm crying. This is the worst Valentine's Day ever, but this is the love of my life. You know, I loved what, you know, everybody has said this weekend, and I've been here all day. And, you know, this is the love of my life. And it's like, really, really, this is the love of your life. And, you know, and it wasn't that long after that that I, you know, there was another problem, and I got him home and I got him to bed, and I was going to go home. I wasn't going to stay there. And the back of his building is kind of L-shaped, and there's like this parking lot, and I was parked in this parking lot, and I thought, you know, I don't know if I can start the car, because if I start the car, what if he wakes up? And then if he wakes up, what's going to happen? Is he going to stay there? What's going to happen? It's still kind of early. And it took so much effort to get him home and get him to bed. So, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And I just started to cry. You know, I mean, talk about like, I can't even live my life. I can't even start my car because in my car might disturb somebody, you know? And a couple nights later, I'm at this club and this drag queen's talking to me. You know, Tiffany Daniels Lane, the Empress of the City of Seattle, no less, you know, and all decked out. And she's like, Philo, what's going on? You don't look good. And for some reason, I guess because I was talking to a cartoon character rather than a real human, you know, in my mind, like a real human is like, let me tell you. And I told her everything about what was going on. And she sat there with me and she listened. And she was like, oh my gosh, Philo. And finally she said, have you ever heard of a program called Al-Anon? And I was like, no, what's Al-Anon? And I didn't know that, you know, Tiffany Daniels Lane by day was Dan R. of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon in the daytime. He's like, you know, she's like, will you meet me at a meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock in the afternoon? And I was like, oh, like, okay, I'll go. And so, you know, I went to my first Al-Anon meeting and with Dan R. and who became my sponsor. And at my very first Al-Anon meeting, it wasn't just like one light bulb, kind of popped on. And I was like, oh my gosh, is that, oh my gosh, maybe I belong in Al-Anon. And by the time the meeting was over, even though I don't remember anything that anybody particularly had said, it's like every light bulb on an entire chandelier had lit up. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need Al-Anon so bad. Who are you people? Like, how have I not known about this? And you're like, oh my gosh. And, you know, but although I thought, you know, I'll be able to like help him stop drinking by going originally, you know, so it took a while in Al-Anon to kind of get that the real problem that I needed to really sort of work on was myself, you know. But going back to those early days in Al-Anon, it was like, I think I was somewhere in the middle of the steps, maybe like step 6 and 7, you know, when, you know, I called Dan one day and he was like, I'm like, Dan, something really weird's going on. He's like, what's going on, Philo? And I said, I don't know. It's the weirdest feeling I ever had in my life. And it's so weird. And he's like, well, describe it to me. And so I started describing what was going on. And he said, you know what's going on, Philo? And I was like, what? He said, I think you're getting this precious gift of serenity. Only for you, it's a tax of serenity because I don't think you've ever had serenity in your life ever. And it feels really uncomfortable. But trust me, kiddo, you're going to get used to this and you're going to start to really value it and you're going to start to really, you know, live your life for it. I was like, oh, are you serious? This is the most uncomfortable I've ever been. You know, I think that people in normal sorts of relationships kind of like, you know, they meet someone and it was so great to hear Kent and Debbie and, you know, and like witness successful love and, you know, and to share that on Valentine's Day and Dawn Stephanie? Yeah, this morning, and it was so, so wonderful, sponsorship and having those relationships that we get here. And oh, it was so great to listen to all of that today. But, you know, I think that normal people sort of I think normal people, like, they go out on a date and they have this little list and the second date, things become a little safer and a little more comfortable. And the third date, things become a little safer and a little more comfortable to share a little more. And I know because I've seen this on television and I've heard you guys talk about it here in Al-Anon. But for me, it's kind of the opposite. It's like the more intimate things become, the worse, the more uncomfortable it becomes. It's like, you know, oh my gosh, like now what's going to happen? Because it's like, when you grow up with people who are so untrustworthy, you know, I just sort of grew up with this level of like, you know, I just couldn't trust them to do anything. And if this is what love looks like, then what intimacy and love is a really sort of terrifying experience. So it was like, it's taken a long time in Al-Anon, you guys, to like grow into this and to become someone who's eventually, slowly, you know, doing the work here to kind of get to a place of just being okay and really starting to love who I am, regardless of what anybody else thinks, you know? And 703. I remember working the steps. I remember doing my fourth step and my fifth step, and my sponsor saying, you know, Philo, like, you can't have a relationship with someone's potential. I was like, what? You know what I mean? It's like, because it's like every relationship that I had ever had was with who I thought you could be someday, with my help, of course, rather than who you actually were right now, you know? And having been in one of those relationships later on in my life, where somebody was like, are you wearing that? It was like, oh my gosh, like what, how? It's like, I get when my sponsor was me, when he said like, it's actually pretty abusive to not just let somebody be who they are and love them as they are. And I was like, oh my gosh, here I am thinking I'm being helpful. And it turns out I was kind of being just controlling and manipulative and abusive for a long period of time. Like, how the hell did that happen? Because I knew if you just did exactly as I thought and then you just did behave the way that I wanted you to be, this whole world would be a better place. Only I'm in a car crying in the middle of the night because I can't start the car because somebody might wake up. You know, it's like, so obviously it's not working for me. It's not working for me. And my life has become insane. You know, it's like the family disease of alcoholism is a devastating thing. It affects everyone, regardless of whether you're the alcoholic or not. And the imprints that the stuff that happened in my house put on me are stuff that still haunts me to this day, you guys. It just still haunts me to this day. But there isn't anything that hasn't turned out to be something of value in helping somebody else in Al-Anon. Isn't one single thing that hasn't turned out to be some piece that it's a gift here. There isn't one single thing that hasn't come up listening to somebody else's fifth step and I get to go, oh my gosh, yeah, I know exactly what that's like, honey. I know exactly what that's like. You know, every single thing from my tragic past has turned out to be something of value. And if it turns out that these things that are of value now, then possibly maybe they weren't a mistake in some weird way, even though they sure felt like them at the time. And if these things aren't a mistake, then maybe I'm not a mistake, you know? And then maybe like my higher power made me exactly the way that I'm supposed to be right now to do what I'm supposed to be doing on the planet. And what a gift that is, you know. I got enough Al-Anon after a few years. I mean, I was really a sick case, you guys. People were like, you know, Philo, what are you doing going out with that person? There's so many red flags. Can't you see them? And I was like, I don't even know what a red flag is. Like, you guys had to teach me like, it's not that I didn't even know what red flags were. I literally couldn't see them. It's like I had, you know, before we were talking about chemistry on the phone, Yvonne, it was like, I think that, yeah, it's like, you know, having chemistry with someone is not necessarily a good thing. When I'm all my sort of receptors are like set up in this really weird way for like, oh, you know, mentally ill alcoholic. Oh, yes, I have had all of these pre-programmed for you to like slip right in. And it's just taken time. It just takes time. It takes time. It takes steps. It takes 10 steps. It takes work doing the program. It takes a higher power. It takes some time and healing, you know, and I've gotten there. But I got just enough Al-Anon early on where it's like, oh, you guys taught me enough to be a little dangerous. You know, it's like, oh, I started to, you know, like, oh, looking for, okay, well then if I have to watch out for things that are unhealthy, it's like every person that I dated turned out eventually I found something that wasn't healthy or right about them. And it was like time to eliminate them and move on, you know? And it was like using the tools in my program of Al-Anon to kind of, and eventually sort of isolate myself from other people, which is not the ideal that we do here. It's not about detaching with love. It's, you know, I was detaching with a machete, you know, and like, out of the way, next, you know. I can see, I spot it now, I see it, that's toxic, I gotta go, you know. And it's like not letting anybody just be a human being, not letting anybody just be where they are, having a human experience, and somehow letting, having to know, you know, I've learned so much in Al-Anon, you guys, to where it's like, whatever you're doing today doesn't necessarily, at least, you know, sometimes for short minutes here and there, or sometimes for a few hours, depending on how it might be. I might have to call my sponsor about that one and do a little 10-step writing. I might have to do a little more work, but it's like, regardless of sort of what's going on in the world now, and regardless of whatever it is you are doing or not doing as a human being or an alcoholic or whatever it is out there in the world, it's like, I have gotten to be okay. Not only have I gotten to be okay, but I've been able to like find a lot of love in my life. Love with sponsees, love with from my friends. You know, I have a Palentine who came by with like a bunch of chocolates and stuff, and she's just adorable. And it's like, you know, my Palentine came because it's like, you're single and you needed chocolates for Valentine's Day. And I'm like, oh, thank you, Palentine. You know, it's like, that's really sweet. Yeah. I didn't have stuff like that when I got here, you guys. You know, I'll share a little bit about my folks because it's like, you know, it's the ultimate testament. You know, in step 12, it says this, it says, dealing with our loved ones, our closest, most important, and often most troublesome relationships can be a strong test of our recovery. These are often the people who were responsible for seeking out Al-Anon in the first place. We may be connected to them financially, emotionally, and legally. We need to apply our Al-Anon program continually in all areas of these relationships. This is usually the place of greatest challenge and thus holds the potential for the greatest healing. To learn to act lovingly in intimate relationships is an important goal for many of us. To do so requires continual practice of all the steps, as well as the tools found in the traditions and concepts. You know, and at some point, because my parents were so old and none of my brothers were capable of taking care of them, it's like I thought, you know, after three years in Al-Anon, I moved to California, which is a huge success of Al-Anon, you guys, because people were like, you know, you can't leave. And it's like, oh, no, I can. I'm going to go off and have a life. You know, it's amazing. I've gotten to do this. But eventually my parents got really old and they needed some help and there was no one around to do it. And I thought, wow, do I want to be the person that's doing that after all this crap that's happened? And you guys kind of taught me that I can be the kind of son that I want to be, regardless of whether my parents were ever the kind of parents that I needed, you know? So I started showing up and I'm there and I'm cleaning up and I'm taking care of them and, you know, and I'm there. And, you know, the last time I was there when my mom could talk, you know, it was like, you know, cleaning up the house for a week and getting stuff in order and taking care of her. And, you know, and the last thing she says is, you know, on my way out the door was like, yeah, go back to California. You know, you're always a disappointment. You know, none of your brothers like you because you're gay. You know, you've never been, you know, and it goes on for 10 minutes. But it's like I'm there and I'm listening. And I'm like, no, Mom, that's not true. And I know that's not true because of Al-Anon. And I know that you're just sick, you know, and I'm not telling her that. I'm just going, Mom, I love you, but that's not true, you know. Mom, I love you, but that's not true. And it's not that they didn't actually go to a friend's afterwards and cry for about an hour because it still hurts, but it's like the fact that I know it's not true today is totally a gift of Al-Anon, you know? When she, you know, last time went up there for Christmas and got there and it turned out that she'd had a stroke and she was no longer able to talk. She was talking a made up language like, dorp, 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 and alone in the middle of nowhere in rural Washington with the people, you know, who were the instigators of the crime, and, you know, and I'm taking care of him on my father's and his adult diapers to, you know, peeled over on a desk, and I'm like, oh, Dad, got to take care of you too, and there's bugs in the kitchen, and we're going to get those cleaned up, and I get to show up and be here and be of service to people, regardless of whether they're who they are, you know, and I can do this and I can do this because I want to, and I can check in with my sponsor every day. And, you know, and it was Christmas Eve and we watched some Dolly Parton movie and I thought, wow, we might actually end up having a good Christmas after all. And then Christmas morning, my mom had a massive stroke and, you know, and she had this thing that she was not, "Don't you ever call an ambulance for me again," she said, like probably 27 times in the last year or two before this happened. So it was like, you know, my thing is like, I should call an ambulance, but it's like her thing is don't. And I've sort of learned here in Al-Anon, it's like, I'm going to do what you want to do. I don't have to do what I need to do or what I want to do. I'm going to follow your wishes, lady, and I'm going to not call an ambulance. You know, so I'm spending 6 days alone with her in rural Washington while she passes and reading her some of her favorite stories and, you know, holding her hand. And it's like, gosh, you guys, how the hell has this happened? Such a gift of Al-Anon. And, you know, not that I was happy about it always at the time, but it's like, oh my gosh, what a gift. What a freaking gift. And, you know, and then since then, my dad's been alone, and it was like I got to fly up and take care of my dad. And somehow this guy who, you know, was 102 years old is no longer the guy that used to beat me up when I was a kid, you know. He's just this frail old man, and I'm the one taking care of him, you know. And he's like, I'm so glad it's you. I'm so grateful, Philo. Thank you so much for coming up and, you know, it's like, and I'm so glad because I feel like I never really got to know you when you were little, you know, and we got to have this relationship that I would have never had I not ended up here. And, you know, and my oldest brother, like, went to visit and gave my dad COVID and everybody else in the family COVID, and my father passed a couple months ago. And it's mind-boggling to me how much that hurts, because it's like so much growing up, I was like, you know, these people can go, whoosh, you know, but you guys have taught me how to love and even love people that I didn't even think was possible for me to love. And, you know, I got to be the person, Philo, you speak all the time. Can you say something at mom's funeral? I was like, oh my gosh, I do not want to do that. But it's like, I guess I can. And I can find some things of value about her and share them with everyone and mean them, thanks to being here in Al-Anon, you know? And I, you know, haven't really found like the love of my life but I feel like I'm more prepared for it than I've ever been. Because these steps just continue to work, and Al-Anon continues to mold me, and I continue to turn into somebody who kids who come from where I come from never get to be. So I'm so grateful, and thanks y'all for listening. Thanks again, Yvonne, for asking, and what an honor to speak today on such an incredible panel of people. Thank you.
Thank you, Philo. Let's unmute and give Philo a hand, please.
Love you, Philo.
Thank you, Philo.
Love you, Philo.